Thank you very much for the introduction and for opportunity to speak at this workshop. Special thanks to organizers for putting it together. They asked me to talk on paper we wrote with Shamit Kasher and two of his students, the title of which John just announced, and this is the tab number, which is pretty old. It's 03-10-159. And in this work, we studied moduli stabilization in hadronic string via Wilson lines, which are common ingredients in many realistic models of particle physics, which we obtained from hadronic strings. So I think it will be useful, before I jump to actual techniques, to set the stage and introduce the ingredients, as well as review various other uses of Wilson lines that we have in context of hadronic strings. So the general framework for this talk is obtaining minimally supersymmetric, as the title of this workshop suggests, Grand unified theories from hadronic string. And in any realistic model, we want to achieve several features in order for it to be realistic. So first of all, we have to have Gauss symmetry breaking from the unification gauge group to baryon number conserving gauge group. We also have to reproduce the realistic spectrum of matter fields. We have to make sure that proton doesn't decay too fast, address the proton decay problem, and doublet triplet splitting. Namely, make sure that color shortener of the Higgs boson is very heavy, so I could continue this list and put here the moduli problem. Strong CP problem. Flavor changing processes, etc., etc. This is a list of pretty standard problems in grand unified theories that we want to realize in a particular context, and that context could be either F theory on collabial fourfold, M theory on G2 manifold, or tetrahedronic string on collabial threefold. And all of these features of a realistic model should be encoded in one way or the other in the geometry of a compactification manifold, either collabial manifold or G2 manifolds, which are involved in this problem. And in the end, we get N equals 1 Suzy Gauss. Okay, so the standard let's see. So we'll focus today on hadronic string on collabials, and in this case. Let X be collabial threefold, then there is E8 cross E8 vector bundle over holomorphic Young-Mills bundle over collabial, which has to satisfy certain properties. In particular, second Chern class of the bundle has to be the same as second Chern class of the tangent bundle over the collabial. And standard way to achieve this condition is to use the standard embedding. So in particular, we can choose the gauge connection in one of the A8s to be spin connection of the manifold, and then some connection, say, in the E6 component of the group. And in this way, we naturally satisfy this condition. And moreover, we break E8 cross E8 gauge symmetry. Down to some G gut, which in this case is E6 cross E8, where in this example G gut is E6. Okay. So further on, we want to consider Wilson lines. In order to break this group to the standard model gauge group or any other Baryon number conserving group. And this is done with Wilson lines. Break got down to G MSSM or any other group, and for this we have to require that fundamental group of the Calabi-Yau space is non-trivial, and in particular consider holonomies which are given by first order exponents of the integrals of gauge connection. For example, if fundamental group of the manifold is ZP, cyclic group of order P, then typical holonomy, which we can find in this way, is given by diagonal matrix of, can be diagonalized to exponential of 2 pi I K1 over P, etc., up to exponential of 2 pi I K8 over P. So these are the holonomies which allow us to break the grand unified gauge group down to SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. And if you wish, and this is, again, achieved by considering manifolds, Calabi-Yau manifolds with non-trivial fundamental group. So as an example, we can consider our favorite quintic threefold, X naught, which is given by Z1 to the sixth plus Z2 to the sixth plus Z5 to the sixth plus various deformations, which are also represented by order 5 monomials in complex coordinates Z1 through Z5. This defines an equation in CP4. These are projective coordinates. As you know, this manifold has H11 equals 1 from the class of CP4, H21 equals 101, and I equals minus 200. But what's important for us is that it admits an action by group gamma, group of order 5, which takes Z1 through Z5 into multiplication of coordinates by fifth roots of unity, which I denote by omega Z1, omega squared Z2, etc. through omega p g5, where again omega is exponential of 2 pi I over 5. Okay? So then we can consider fundamental group of original quintic divided by this group of symmetries, x0 mod gamma, and this is the same as gamma since original manifold is simply connected, so this is just z5. So that's an example, in fact, very simple example, which will be the prototype of most of the quotients and ways to realize the Wilson lines that that we need for our purposes. Again, this is very standard construction, so I shouldn't. Are there any questions about it? I guess it's pretty standard thing. So let me also mention that dividing by this group can also reduce the number of pattern generations in a very natural way. Number of generations is given by the little characteristic of the Calabi-Yau divided by 2. That dividing, considering such orbifolds, can be very useful because chi of x mod gamma is the same as chi of x divided by order of gamma, assuming that gamma is freely acting. And therefore, in the previous example, we can enhance a little bit the group gamma from z5 to z5 cross z5, so a product of two cyclic groups, to obtain some realistic number. So, for example, we can take, again, our quintic, but now to be of a very special form, given by sum over zi to the 5 plus 5 psi product of all zi's equals 0, allow only one deformation by a very symmetric monomial here, and then consider the following group. Choose gamma to be freely generated by two generators, G1 and G2, which act as follows. They take Vi into... The first is the same as before. It's multiplication by various fifth roots of unity, and the second generator is going to permute all the z's, so it takes z1, z2, z3, z5 into z2, z3, etc. Z4, Z5, and Z1. So this group gamma is nothing but Z5 cross Z5 and has obviously order 25. So in this case, the number of generations that we get is one half of absolute value of chi of X mod gamma, and this is nothing but 4. So it's kind of semi-realistic. Okay? So before I go to the actual theme of my talk, let me mention yet another use of orbifolds and Wilson lines just to convince you that the framework that we're considering is very standard and very natural in the heterotic string, so this last problem is going to be doublet triplet splitting. So if we consider SU5 theory, G got SU5, which is the original Georgia Glashow model, then the Higgs sits in a doublet, sorry, in representation 5 and 5 bar. In particular, in the fundamental of it, there is a fundamental representation which contains Higgs triplet and H up, and there is a conjugate representation 5 bar which contains HT bar and H down. And the problem is that the mass scale that we want for H up and H down has to be of the order of electroweak scale, of course, and for the triplet, the mass has to be of the order of M God. So the ratio of these two scales is a very small number. That one naturally wants to realize in such kind of compactifications, and this is again the place where discrete symmetries of the same sort as we had in the God symmetry breaking and reducing the number of generations can help. Namely, let's assume that there is a symmetry F which acts on this multiplier as follows. It multiplies HT and H up by triplets and doublet by phases, which I call e to the I alpha and e to the I beta. And likewise, acts on the other five-dimensional representation 5, which is conjugate, and that's taken to the same thing with phases e to the I gamma and e to the I delta, HT bar and H down. Okay, so also let's suppose that these phases satisfy the following condition, that e to the I alpha plus gamma, which is product of this phase and this phase, which controls the coupling of the triplet and its conjugate, is equal to 1, so that symmetry allows a mass term between HT and HT bar. And let's also assume that e to the I guess it's going to be beta plus delta, is not equal to 1. Let's assume that we have such a symmetry. In this case, what we get is that triplet mass can be non-zero, and generically, you'll be of the order of God scale, whereas the mu parameter will be approximately zero, or at least of the same order of Suzy breaking or electroweak scale, whichever is the lowest scale in this kind of problem. So this idea of using symmetry was implemented by Witten in the context of fairly generic heterotic and M-theory compactifications, again on manifolds which involve such discrete symmetries, and in particular can be realized as orbifolds of Calabi-Yau spaces by freely acting groups. So I won't go into detail, but the basic idea of that is that you need a three cycle, which I'll call Q, which might be of the form of quotient of a three sphere by some group gamma, which eventually will lead to this kind of symmetry. And again, it's very easy to see that we already have such a three cycle in the model we discussed on this part of the blackboard, where we had gamma acting on the entire Calabi-Yau space. So let me again come back to this example. So again, if we have x given by sum over zi to the 5 plus 5 psi z1 through z5 as a hypersurface in CB4, then we can consider to find such a cycle, Q, which has this form, we can simply consider the image of the logarithm map, which takes coordinate zi into log of absolute value of zi squared. Then the image of this map is what's called amoeba, in real algebraic geometry, or what's called tropical geometry. And in this case, if we consider image of this map of a for the squinting, it's actually topologically S3. You can very easily convince yourself that that's the case by thinking about lower dimensional examples. For instance, in the lower dimensional case, if you consider hypersurface not on CP4, but in CP2 of homogeneous hypersurface of degree 3, then the corresponding amoeba will have three asymptotic ends. It will look roughly like this. This is the image of this logarithm map to the base in the case of hypersurface of degree 3 in CP2. We can also consider, this is kind of unprojected version, there is also so-called projected version of the same amoeba, which looks as follows. It's simply obtained by compactification of the previous picture, and has, roughly speaking, the following shape. Those of you who are familiar with toric geometry can easily recognize the toric diagram for CP2 and the corresponding hypersurface. What's important, however, is that in both of these pictures, the topology of this image is S1, and I claim that by analogy, you can prove, or easy to show, that if you consider this degree 5 hypersurface, then the image is going to be three-sphere. So now let's come back to this action of the group gamma, which originally was Z5 cross Z5. And it's defined here. And consider how it acts on the amoeba, on this three-cycle, once we quotient the entire Calabi-Yau space by this gamma. Well, this gamma consists of two pieces, first generated by multiplication by phases, and the second by permutation of the coordinates. Well, clearly, multiplication by phases doesn't do anything because we're considering the image under this logarithm map, and that takes absolute value. However, permutation of the coordinates does act on the S3, and the action is free. So what's left is, in fact, Q of the form S3 divided by Z5. Any questions? So the reason I went so thoroughly through these several examples and uses of quotients and Wilson lines is to show you that these kind of constructions are very natural in heterotic context and have been already used before for addressing various issues in supersymmetric gut theories, namely to achieve long-lived baryons, gut symmetry breaking, and realistic spectrum of matter multiplets. So now I'll show that essentially the same ingredients can be also used to stabilize moduli so that we don't have to introduce anything new. We'll just take this setup, and this quintic example will be our prominent example throughout this talk, and we'll see that it does lead to moduli stabilization for free. Yes? Sure. I mean, I'm just taking the same story and trying to say that, sure, there is an obvious question of, I mean, probably to this list of problems, I should add this claim that there are no exotics. I mean, that's what I really mean by realistic matter spectrum. I mean, the fact that I got four generations here doesn't really do the justice, so I would have to make sure that there are no exotics. But so it's the usual kind of analysis one have to go through and check that for certain orbifolds we get such states, for certain we don't, and so on and so forth. I'm just trying to set a fairly general framework and then just point out that for free we get an extra bonus that I'm going into. But you're completely right that, yes, we do have to address this as well as other issues. I believe so.
So there's no...
No, in this case there are no fixed points, right? It's free on the entire Calabi-Yau as well as on the amoeba, on the three manifold, on the three sphere.
So you don't expect
lines. Right. So in this particular case there are no twisted sectors to worry about. That's right. But I guess the question was in more general context, right? I mean, there are other features of using these discrete groups and Wilson lines, for example. In order to get two Higgs doublets, we do have to consider Wilson lines, and so on and so forth. I just don't want to go in further technicalities, which will, and obviously there will be a long list of uses and difficulties with Wilson lines, but this is a fairly standard framework, and especially in the context of heterotic strings. So, as I say, main purpose for me was just to introduce notation and this particular example, which I'll take as a toy model. Okay. Any further questions? Now, let's add another ingredient and infer flux compactifications. So, if you turn on the fluxes on this manifold, we generate a superpotential, which is essentially proportional to the flux that we turn on, wedge some free form or relevant form in a given n equals 1 compactification. And for example, in the type 2B context that has been discussed here many times and probably will be discussed in further lectures, this three form is a holomorphic three form, and flux is a combination of Ramon Ramon and NSNS three form on a collabial. For us, the only flux we can consider in the context of heterotic strings is a three form H. So this is going to be H field from the heterotic string, and the flux superpotential is essentially given by the same formula. We want to add one more ingredient to it, because flux by itself, at least in the case of heterotic string, would not stabilize all the moduli, would not do the job. And we want to combine it with some non-perturbative effects, and those could be either instantons of various kinds, or Gugino condensation, or something else. I'll choose it to be Gugino condensation, following a very nice idea of Rom, Dyne, Seiberg, and Witten. So the picture, which again goes back to Dyne, Rom, Seiberg, and Witten, around 85, is that we consider a combination of flux and Gugino condensate in the hidden sector. So to represent this pictorially, I'll draw the two gauge groups, E8 cross E8, as two brains representing the end of the universe of this heterotic model. So this brain, this sector will be visible, and this one is hidden. So here we want to consider E8 broken to the gut gauge group, as we discussed before. In the other sector, in the hidden sector, we'll have E8 broken to some subgroup, which I'll call H, and this is the one which will undergo Gugino condensation. Okay. Then the superpotential of this system, of this model, is a sum of two terms. It's sum of the flux contribution plus Gugino condensate. Which looks as follows. I'll call H the integral of a H field in heterotic theory of some three manifold. You may keep in mind this Q that we had before over some three cycles. So H will be just a number, so that it's easier to deal with. That's essentially that formula. Minus CH, which is the dual Coxeter number of group H, minus 8 pi squared over CH times S, where S is the dilaton field. Dilaton superfield whose bosonic part essentially controls the Young-Mills coupling constant plus the axion. As usual, we have to, I should probably say that this flux potential by itself already stabilizes all the complex structure moduli of the Calabi-Yau in the usual way, so I'm not going to review it here. So instead, we are going to focus on the dilaton dependence and see if we can stabilize complex structure moduli plus dilaton. So the relevant equation for dilaton stabilization is, yes? Right, so now again I'm back to slightly more general framework, so it's good to keep in mind this, this particular example. We'll come back to it in a moment, but point is that turning on H field F here essentially tells us that it stabilizes all the complex structure moduli, no matter how many of them are. So it just tells us that H has to be of the form 3-0 plus 0-3.
The focusing on the part of H that's around this particular cycle Q, but in general you can turn on the other three cycles, you're just neglecting
that. Exactly, yes. Point is that turning on this H by itself does fix all the complex structure moduli in a fairly universal and generic way. What it doesn't do, it doesn't fix volume and, in fact, Keller moduli, and we'll come back to it, as well as the dilaton. So in order to fix the dilaton, we have to consider this Gagina condensate, and that's what we're going to do in a second. Sorry? That's right. So, right. So let me postpone that as well. Yes. Right. Yeah, so, sorry? Right, but, no, I think for this analysis, it's okay to assume, well, here I do assume that H is closed. In fact, we do want to satisfy this anomaly matching conditions. So we require for example, we use standard embedding and make sure that dH is equal to zero. So in fact, I am going to assume that H is closed, and then you can carry on dimensional reduction from 10 dimensions to 4 and essentially see what are the conditions for the H field that it has to satisfy. Yeah. Oh yes. Right. So let me take right. So here I'm considering the case where H is closed, right? And it's only under that assumption that we reproduce that H is combination of 3-0 plus 0-3, which are multiplied by various complex numbers. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. So, right, this is essentially, let's see, it's a standard result for non-perturbative piece of the superpotential due to Gugino condensate, and you have to be careful to trace all the 8 pi's, etc. So I try to suppress alpha prime, I believe, so that's one, but yeah. Well, there is an obvious scale which enters this formula, right? It's clearly, in this class of models, it's clearly going to be a gut scale or something of that order. So, right. Oh, I don't think that's going to change. So, there is overall dependence of this on some scale which can get minor modifications due to choosing different schemes, but I don't think that, for example, exponents will change. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, this coefficient, I believe, is, I think it's essentially a question of choosing cutoff or, I don't think it's going to change, I don't see how it may change answer by order of, but say, by an order of 10 or something like that. If it's a coefficient of order 1, or 2 or something like that, I don't mind, but I don't see. In particular, this exponent, it involves essentially the one loop beta function, right? So that's crucial, right? Right. Well, this coefficient, okay, let's postpone it. I mean, for me, it's definitely going to be something of order 1 multiplying this expression. I think we both agree on that, and that's good enough. Sorry? Right. Right. So I'm going to get to that in a second, right? How to implement charge quantization. In fact, that's what I was going to say next. But first, let's write down the condition for dSw equals to 0. So this gives h equals ch over 2 plus 8 pi squared. And you see, I'm trying to be careful about various h pi's, etc., e to the minus 8 pi squared over ch times s. So the problem is that if you want to stabilize the dilaton in a controllable weakly coupled region, then this term has to be exponentially small, and usually the problem is that due to flux quantization, h takes integer values and therefore can be small, has to be always of order 1. So that's typically a problem, and that's precisely what was the obstacle in using this in early days. However, you can notice, as has been alluded in a previous question by Bobby, that H field is actually modified in the case of heterotic string, and that's what we're going to exploit right now. So in the hadronic string, H is actually D of the 2 form. Again, I'm assuming that H is closed, minus transaminance of gauge connection plus transaminance of spin connection. And this amounts to the fact that little h, which is defined as integral of a 3 form, as a period of the 3 form, can be fractional because the transaminance invariant of either gauge connection or spin connection itself can be fractional. So this is in fact what will allow us to obtain a small number and hopefully satisfy that relation for the dilaton stabilization in a weakly coupled region. For example, if you come back to three manifolds, Qs of the form S3 mod Vp, where P could be 5, as in one of the previous examples, and choose the Wilson lines, as we did in the case of God symmetry breaking, to be 2 pi I K1 over P, etc., up to exponential of 2 pi I K8 over P, then H, which is given by transaminance invariant of such gauge connection, which has this holonomy on a length space Q, is actually given by sum over KI squared over 2P mod integers. So crucial piece here is that there is this denominator P, which tells us that roughly the transaminance invariant or H flux can be 1 over N, where N is the order of the fundamental group involved in this problem. For instance, if you consider gauge condensation in E7 and substitute the values, then condition dfw equals 0 tells us that h has to be 9 plus 8 pi squared real part of s e to the minus 8 pi squared s over 18. And in particular, if you take H to be of order roughly 1 over 10, then this corresponds to alpha god, which is given by corresponding value of S to be roughly 1 over 20. So it's weakly coupled, as we expect. And similarly, if you choose H to be 1 over 40, then this gives the value of alpha god a better value, which is 1 over 25, etc. So you see that indeed, as Bobby alluded in the previous question, you have to decrease the value of H quite a bit to get smaller and smaller values of alpha god in a more and more favorable region. But even with a modest model like that quintic, where P is 5, And therefore, denominator in this formula is 10. We can get some very decent values of alpha gut. What's missing in this picture, at least what's missing in this picture, is volume stabilization. So let's consider for a second how we could get some dependence on the volume modulus. Right, so I can't do everything in 1 hour talk. So I had this huge list of problems like flavor changing neutral currents, fermion masses and mixings and things like that. So not everything now, okay? So it's somewhere there on my list, and if I had another hour, I would probably tell you the solution. Okay, so the point is that in order to obtain dependence of that superpotential on the volume modulus, one has to consider one-loop threshold corrections to gauge coupling functions, and in that case, the superpotential would be slightly modified, as given by a similar expression, where in the exponent we have minus 8 pi squared over ch s plus beta t, where t is the volume modulus, s as before, the one which contains the dilaton, and this is the volume. And Wilsonian gauge coupling functions are given by, in the both sectors, given by s plus minus beta t, where beta is some coefficient computed from topological data of the Calabi-Yau and the gauge bundle. Right, so with this superpotential and the standard Keller potential, one finds the following equations for the minimum describe supersymmetric anti-de Sitter vacuum, and dSw equals zero and dtw equals zero, in this case, give the following two equations, 3s equals beta t and h equals ch plus 8 pi squared, very similar to what we had before. Which again, one can solve and find supersymmetric critical point, which describes anti-de Sitter vacuum. Interesting feature of this critical point, however, which we obtained by taking account one-loop corrections, threshold corrections, due to volume dependence, is that the gauge coupling function in the visible and hidden sector have rather peculiar form. Namely, the visible sector gauge coupling function has the form is S minus beta T, as appears on that board, and substituting the values from this equation, you can easily see that this is minus 2 times the dilaton field, which I assume to be real. And similarly, the hidden sector gauge coupling function is S plus beta T and is equal to 4 times S. so this is fine. But problem is that the first guy, this one, in the unification sector, in the realistic sector, appears to be negative. So it actually suggests that we have a strong coupling singularity before we go to negative values. And even though it may appear a little bit mysterious, in fact, this is a very common phenomenon, and it has it already appears in compactifications to six dimensions, and has been studied a lot in the mid-90s. So what happens is that the Calabi-Yau manifold, once we push the dilaton modulus to negative values, Calabi-Yau undergoes flop transition. So we essentially get a flop transition, which I'll indicate like the standard in the standard cartoon. Where I denote the geometric modulus of Calabi-Yau by t, and then at some point t equals 0, we have the cunnifold transition. And there are two semiclassical regions in this moduli space, one of which is the region where we started, and here t correctly describes Young-Neill's coupling constant in the usual way, namely t goes like 1 over g Young-Neill squared. And the effect of this strong coupling transition is essentially that on the other side, 1 over g Young-Neill squared is given by minus t, or minus and then some number times t. So essentially, it's okay, but it's kind of an unpleasant feature because we started in a weakly coupled region, and then analysis forces us to go through such transition. And even though it's well understood, it would be nicer to start somehow on this other side and describe everything without having to go through such transitions, etc. So instead of trying to convince you that this is the right thing to do, or that this is a consistent picture, let me conclude, and some of the conclusions are the following. It's not hard, and I gave an example here, to construct models where some of the moduli, not all of them, but say all but one, are stabilized. So I'll say that there are many models with all but one moduli stabilized. Here, the one which was especially troubling is the volume modulus, and we managed to get the complex structure moduli, the dilaton, without too much trouble. I hope I convinced you that it was rather natural in the framework of heterotic models with Wilson lines that we use all the time in building realistic models of particle physics, but we didn't have to go through this construction. In fact, by taking, say, M-theory on a fourfold or F-theory on a fourfold with only one volume modulus, we would be able to do exactly the same job, namely to stabilize all the moduli except one which would appear in the form of either dilaton or volume again. So in order to do a better job, the second conclusion is that we need to meet three criteria, which I'll call three C's, which usually appear to be problematic. And that follows. First, we have to consider, and in particular, count very carefully all the moduli. And in some models, and the models I've discussed may be part of this list, appear to be this point is rather non-trivial. In particular, counting all the moduli and taking all in consideration is a problem which we have to address even before we get to questions of stabilizing all the moduli. This is the first C. Second C is we have to maintain control over the model, and that means that all scales in the problem have to be much bigger than the string or Planck scale, and likewise, the coupling constant has to be small in order to make a consistent expansion. And until we came to the volume modulus, we sort of didn't have any problem with any of this. We saw that we could stabilize dilaton and complex structure at large volume and small values of the dilaton, but small values of the string coupling. But then we came into trouble with this point, even though it's conceptually not a big deal. It's kind of phenomenon that we saw before. We have to be honest and say that this is not really the most elegant solution here. And finally, the last C that one has to meet in such models is by constructing explicit examples so in the present context, it's not terribly satisfying that I told you that there is we can go through this strong coupling transition and this kind of physics is well understood. It would be much better and really much more elegant if we could start on the other side and do everything very explicitly without waving our hands or assuming that such models exist. So I guess I'll stop here with this list of open problems.